Next up, we head to Bremerton.
We're in the Normdix Government Center.
And where specifically are we in the Normdix Government Building?
We are in Suite 200 of the Normdix Government Center.
Thank you.
Kurt Wiest is Executive Director of the Bremerton Housing Authority, which builds and maintains public housing projects. We're here to talk about one of those in particular.
Sinclair Park, which was one of the original 11 developments built by the Bremerton Housing Authority during the period of time 1940 to 1945.
Thank you.
This is a history story with three chapters. There's even a celebrity cameo coming up later. But first, chapter one, growth. As a benchmark, take Seattle. It grew by more than 20% over the last decade, making it the fastest growing big city in the country. Now, compare that to Bremerton in the 1940s.
In 1939, the population of Bremerton was about 13,000. By 1945, the population had grown dramatically to 85,000.
Imagine that, quintuple the population in just over 5 years. This was, of course, the period of World War II.
There's a naval shipyard here, and so they were very much involved in not only shipbuilding, but also ship repair.
All those workers needed places to stay.
We had chicken coops turned into dwellings and attics converted.
In record time, the Bremerton Housing Authority sprang to life and started building. And building. By 1943, the agency had stood up multiple developments, including Sinclair Park, 280 dwellings arrayed on a hilltop overlooking Sinclair Inlet. As the shipyard work ramped up, workers and their families flooded into Bremerton. Sinclair Park filled up almost immediately with men, women, and many, many kids.
The stories that I hear over and over again is what a fun place it was to live because you had plenty of kids to play with, get into mischief with, have adventures, and all the other kinds of things that go along with day-to-day life. You went to school with them, and everybody was kind of tied together by both work experiences, school experiences, and wartime experiences.
That tableau of a bustling neighborhood of prefab houses, thick with kids and wartime activity, that was repeated at West Park and View Ridge, at Sheridan Park and Anderson Cove. But there was one thing that made Sinclair Park different.
The distinguishing feature for Sinclair Park was it was a segregated property.
Chapter 2, Race.
The vast majority of the residents at Sinclair Park were non-Caucasian. And that was the way it was.
We asked, was it going to be integrated? And they assured us, oh yes, it's going to be integrated. Well, they brought busloads of people, our people, in here to work in the Navy Yard. And they put all of them up there.
That's Marie Greer from a collection of oral histories on Sinclair Park from the early 2000s. In those recordings, residents recall how this mostly black housing project lacked amenities.
We didn't have no street lights. We had no telephones. We had no buses. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get buses.
Earl Smith talked about how this was especially tough for all those kids.
And of course, we lived up there, you know, a segregated hill. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the city didn't really bring anything to offer us either, like a little play field or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the city just ignored us. Mm-hmm. It was a sad affair for young people.
At the same time, residents began creating their own community institutions. Local chapters of the Elks Club and the USO sprang up. There were church services, a community center, and the neighborhood had its own radio station.
Bristol-Myers, the makers of Sal Hepatica, famous laxative, and Minute Rub, modern chest rub, brings you Duffy.
In spite of the racist policies that created a segregated development at Sinclair Park, residents like Audrey Miller said they quickly solidified into a genuine, close-knit community.
Out of all of it, I feel we all came out still very fortunate. And we came from different parts of the United States to better themselves.
That's right.
And probably had it not been for that, we may not be where we are now today.
Yeah.
We'd still be stuck in our hometowns or our areas from where we came from.
Right.
And it was a beginning.
Chapter 3, An Awakening. And here's where the celebrity cameo comes in. Among the crush of workers arriving in 1943 on a Trailways bus was a father and his two boys fresh in from the south side of Chicago. The older brother was a restless 11-year-old named Quincy Jones.
Well, what happened is we went out there and we wanted to be baby gangsters like Rube Remington. It was Remington Washington.
Oh, so you wanted to. That's him, the legendary performer, composer, and producer, telling Stephen Colbert on The Late Show about this crucial chapter in his life. It's a story that Kurt Wiest knows well, too.
The community center at Sinclair Park was a hub of activity, and apparently there were some pies in the kitchen.
And we heard there was some lemon meringue pie and ice cream coming outside. We knew everything.
That sounds like gangster That's work, right, my friend.
And he and his teenage friends snuck in and were going to help themselves to some pies that were there.
And then we went around individually and broke in all the offices, right?
Yeah.
We were gangsters, man.
It sounds like it.
And while they were in the building, he, whether he had ever noticed it or not, he saw a piano.
Mrs. Zare is the supervisor's office, and there was a spinet piano over in the corner. And I went over and I closed the door, and something said, "Idiot, go back in that room and see that, check that piano out." And I didn't know human beings played instruments, you know. I really didn't. And so I went over to that piano slowly, and I touched it, and every cell in my body said, "This is what you're going to do the rest of your life."
He was immediately connected to that instrument, which was just probably just an old beat-up piano in this community center. But it literally, in that moment, it changed his life.
Within a couple of years, the war would be over. Jones and his family left Bremerton for Seattle, and a career filled with names like Miles Davis, Frank Sinatra, and Michael Jackson. Sinclair Park, never meant to be a permanent neighborhood, moved on too. The houses were lifted up and transported to new locations. Some would house married students at the University of Washington. Others would be barged up the Columbia River to the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. Kurt Wiest says Quincy Jones may be Sinclair Park's most notable resident, but he's just one out of tens of thousands who owe some part of their history to Bremerton's World War II housing projects.
For every person like Quincy Jones, there are many, many others who have distinguished themselves in perhaps quiet and simple ways. And we, as an agency, have provided some semblance of stability so that they can pursue whatever their talents might be. So we are so proud of what Quincy Jones has done, but I just believe that there are, you know, just a whole community of others that are equally distinguished in simpler ways.
Kurt Wiest runs the Bremerton Housing Authority. The city of Bremerton is in the process of a major downtown redevelopment called Quincy Square, named after the most famous kid ever to come out of Sinclair Park.